Well, I'm so grateful that we have a chance to be together. And I just want to also bring in how grateful I am that we get to be together every other Wednesday at lunchtime. And we have those reports. I just feel like as a community we get to touch into parts of our family and parts of our world that I don't often hear about. And I'm really grateful for the leadership and the creative thinking and things that are happening all over Sunrise. Want to acknowledge that Uma and Gary are leaving tomorrow to go to Australia. It's only, a 3-day flight.
Yes. We get there on Saturday, yeah. We leave tomorrow and get there on Saturday.
It really is a lot of time on a plane, but it's really worth it to get to Australia. So we're going to continue with our service by having a chance to listen to the song that David played this afternoon, but we'll be able to hear it through the sound system.
Yep. Just briefly say that the song was inspired by the urge to speak up about the plight of children in the world, and most particularly the plight of children in detention centers in this country. And we look down upon people in past eras who've allowed atrocity to go on in their culture without standing up and saying something about it. And here it is going on right in our culture, in our country. I think most of us in the room, if not all of us, are Americans here. It's like our country is doing this. And I just couldn't be all right with being silent. So that inspired me to start a project of creating a music video. So writing a song and then a video. And then with that being, first of all, a spiritual call and with a spiritual message, but also with an implication for the culture in which we live. So I wrote words for it, reached out to Kristen Hoffman, who was here for Rise. Many of you probably heard her sing. And she took those words, she made some adjustments, added a line or two of her own, and then put it to music. And so what I have is, even the songwriting isn't settled, so it could shift a little bit. And then the arrangement isn't finished. And she's reaching out to some really highly qualified musicians to help with the arrangement and all, and maybe even play on it. And then we're going to take it from there. But our agreement is to do whatever we can do to let it have the largest world impact possible. So that's our goal, and this is where we are in it, so I'll play.
We see your smile shining round the world. We see your tears when no one seems to care.
Your wisdom, I see your destiny. Your dream of
I feel like both applauding and praying. I'm so proud of what you've done, and may this have a huge impact, David. It's sacred. I mean, it really touched me deeply. I'm sure it did other people in the room. And, you know, oftentimes when we do things in the dome or do something before service, it's such a sacred offering that applause can change the atmosphere. And yet I want to at least acknowledge it's quite something.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that and just holding it in process, because it's got a ways to go. And Kristen and I are both connected with some really great musicians and people in the music industry. So just even on the production of it, there's a lot to go. And we've got ideas about children's choirs in there and all kinds of stuff, and even possibilities of well-known singers possibly being part of it. And I just say maybe, maybe not, you know, but anyway, there's all that possibility there. So anyway, I appreciate the chance to share the essence of it. So we have a topic in mind for tonight, but sharing the poignancy of that, I'm not ready to just leap into it. Is there anything that anybody wants to say about the theme before we go into what's next? The theme of, well, the children of the world, the theme of this song.
My hope would be to embrace the children, not just from that particular injustice, but any injustice that any child is facing.
Yeah, I had a really wonderful conversation with Kristen this morning about it, and we want to find some balance, so we don't want to lose focus with America and this situation in America, because that was the original intention, and I don't want it just to become so diffuse that, well, it's about all the children of the world, so want to keep it there. And in the video, well, we both have sources we think of video of children in detention camps. And so we want to use that in the video, as well as people marching. But then we have the other interest, which is to include all the children of the world, and that's in the lyrics, you know. So then we're thinking about how do we bring in world music elements. And anyway, and she knows that she's performed with a children's choir in Indonesia. That children's choir could conceivably create a track on there. You know, so anyway, there's all those exciting possibilities. Again, thank you for being with that. The thought is that initially the video imagery would share some of the grief of the plight of children in our world today, and then it would move into our dream and our vision of what we want for our children, and it would portray that and celebrate that. So we thought we could have another ambitious evening together, tackling weighty subjects as a community. And we think we have one that actually meets that measure. So what we want to talk about is power. And the word power is used in all kinds of different ways, so it's got a scientific definition. But we're interested in power in human culture. Ambitious enough for you? So if you think of the word power, I think in a scientific context, it's something like force or energy to move something, to do work. And even the word work has a scientific meaning. When we use it in a human context, we don't just mean force or energy. We also mean control and authority, right? When we say somebody's got power, we don't just mean they're very energetic. We mean they've got control. Or if somebody has power issues over control. So we want to include all of that in our consideration, that the word power includes both the energy that it takes to do something and also the factors of control and authority that allow you to do something. So if you think about it, this is a pretty highly leveraged thing, right? Like, we know that power dynamics in human culture go way south on us, right? It's like it goes to really bad places. And we're watching those dynamics play out in our nation right now in a frightful way, really, when it comes right down to it. But it's not just our culture and nationally now. I mean, things around power have been, well, a cause of calamity in human culture. But also, the other thing to realize is we need power and we need authority, right? So any human culture needs the power to accomplish whatever it's going to accomplish. And then the question becomes, what's the nature of that power and what's the origin of it? And then for each of us in the culture in which we live, that gets very particular, whether we're thinking of it as, whatever circumstance. So our own families, and then in the life we share together here at Sunrise Ranch, like power is a thing. And how do we work with that creatively? So there is both the shadow side of how power works in human culture, but there's a light side as well, meaning that there's a creative expression of power and then a creative need for power. Like, as a community here at Sunrise Ranch, I'm acutely aware we need power. Like, we need the power of upliftment. We need the power to bring health to our own lives, health to our function here. We need the power to bring the message that we have to bring to the world. We need power to get up each day and pull the weeds and do the laundry and cook the food and do all the things that we do. That's about power. And that power is individual, but it's also collective. We need the power to do what we're doing as easily, as productively and creatively as possible. And I'm hoping I'm describing how we're talking about the same thing, whether we're talking about the shadow side and how bad it can go, or whether we're talking about the light side and the need for it, and how if power works well in a culture, it's just exhilarating and uplifting, and allows the gift of that culture to be given and experienced and shared. Back along the way, I wrote a song, "The Power to Change the World." You know, we don't just wake up one morning and change the world. We need a kind of power to do that. What is the power that changes the world, and how is it generated? And just to flesh out the topic a little bit, you know, there are political dimensions of power. There's organizational dimensions of power. There are spiritual dimensions of power. There's emotional power. People who study this stuff talk about all the origins of power. And ultimately, for me, what I believe about that is that we all have the opportunity to be self-empowered. And when we find the origins of our own self-empowerment, we're liberated. We become a powerful human being. And we realize that we're not dependent on anybody else for our power. That doesn't deny that there are political realities, organizational realities, and so on and so forth. But still, now I'm sharing my belief on and advocacy on all this. What I found for myself is most important is to find the origins of my own self-empowerment that don't depend on anybody else, so that I can live an empowered life personally. And then I can be a facilitator of cultural power, power in community, power in culture. And I think that when I look to the people through history or even in the culture today that I have high regard for. They are people who are self-empowered and who are inspiring a culture to become empowered. So we could think of somebody like Martin Luther King. And he was a self-empowered man. He found his internal source of power. And because of that, he empowered a culture. Think of Gandhi was the same, or Nelson Mandela. Those are some prominent and kind of clear and easy to see examples. But of course, they're not the only ones. You know, there's something about a self-empowered person who is truly free, who inspires us all. So I believe that's true for any one of us. They will all have access to that kind of power. And then I believe it's potential for us as a community to be that kind of self-empowered community that can then give a gift to the world. So anyway, I better stop talking if we're going to have any time to share this collectively.
I want to just touch on the fact that David and I have been trained, and some others have, in a course called The Right Use of Power. And that course is primarily geared towards acknowledging that there are places you have power that some people end up using that power to manipulate other people. So in some ways, there's this underlying thing of the potential damage of power differential. And I find the value in learning about that, that when you acknowledge that there might be a power differential, especially if you have more power due to longevity, age, position, you also can be in the position of inspiring the person who doesn't have as much power into their power. And I know that there's lots of manipulation where people feel that someone has power over them and they're telling them what to do. As a spiritually conscious person, knowing you have power is the greatest gift to inspire someone that they have it too, instead of the other way around of imposing it.
Yep, and I'll add my own view that the only right use of power is through a selfless person who's in service to something bigger than they are. And I don't know how you carry power in a good way personally if that's not your perspective, knowing that you know, we're all learning in the process. So with that, I'd like to just open this up, and let's do it so that, I think we did last time, that whoever ends up speaking and finishing chooses who they're going to pass the mic off to. And there's no playing shortstop, you know, taking it on the way to wherever it's going. All right. And given all that we've done so far, we have limited time, so just try to keep your comments concise. And I will lightly facilitate as needed to exercise my power here.
Okay, I'll try to make this as concise as possible, but there are some details that I need to explain to make it more, so you can understand the plot a bit more. There's this, so in this world, there are monsters and humans. The main difference is that monsters have less of a connection to their body and more of a connection to their soul, this making them be able to use magic. Now, humans, on the other hand, have a more connection to their body. They're more physical. Some are lucky and are able to use power, but it's such a rare thing. And so humans, fearing monsters of their magic, decided to seal them away under a mountain. Now, the monsters, there's a king and queen of the monsters, and of course they're upset, but they don't blame the humans. And after a long period of time, they have a child, and after some more time, a human falls. A human child falls into the underground where they live. And the king and queen, pitying the child, took them in and started raising them as their own and teaching them. Now, the reason they can't escape is because the humans created a barrier. To break this barrier, they need 7 human souls and 1 monster soul, and that will make them a god, and they can break the barrier and escape. And just across the barrier, you need 1 human soul and 1 monster soul. Now, The child named Kara, who fell, learned of this. And disliking humanity for reasons unknown, decides and makes a plan with the prince, Azrael, to take her soul, or take their soul, and combine it with his, and go up to the human world and destroy the village, or just take their body up to the flower patch and set their body there where they want to be buried. And so Azrael, after a long time, decided, sure. And so the kid dies, and Azrael takes the soul and leaves with the body. Now, the humans totally misunderstand and think they just killed the human. And so they attack Azrael and injure him severely. Now, once the king and queen find out that Azrael and Kara both died because of humans, they're outraged. And the king immediately sets up a thing saying, any human who falls will die. Absolutely. And will gain 7 human souls, and we will destroy an entire human race for killing my son and imprisoning my people. Now, Toriel, the queen, did not want this. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be faster. This is just the basics, and it gets a lot faster after this. I just need to explain this. Toriel does not want that, breaks up with her husband, and tries to help the children. Now, 6 other children fall. Toriel tries to stop them. They pass through her and die by the hands of the king. Now, after that, this last human falls, and their name is Frisk. Frisk gets Azrael, who became a flower, and Kara, who became a spirit haunting them, starts their journey on trying to save both monsters and humans. Now, they have the ability to die and come back to life, albeit a flower grows on them. And after dying many, 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 many times, they still don't give up. They still continue on moving forward, trying to just get out. And after meeting up with a few people and dying by the hands of multiple monsters over and over, one monster decides to help them. And after moving on further, after their entire body is covered with flowers, they're blind, they're limp, they don't have control of the legs, the arms, nothing. Monster stands, asks them, why are you doing this? Why are you still being so kind? Why didn't you attack us? Why didn't you do this? Why aren't you outraged by us? And the answer is, always be kind. Sometimes kindness is all you can give. Sometimes kindness is enough. Always be kind. And after a battle with the king and tiring him out, not killing them, they don't kill anyone, even though they could, they end up dying by the flowers. And they end up using their soul as the final soul to break the barrier. And after breaking the barrier, the monsters decide not to wage war on the humans because of the sacrifice of the last soul. And those stories told throughout the monsters by the king of the last soul who gave up their life for the monster kind. Sorry, the beginning had to be explained to explain why it was such a big deal.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, be kind. So David was mentioning service, and I think that whenever I think of serving, somehow I'm really empowered, and I can empower others. And I would just reemphasize that I have the power to empower others, and therefore we can have more of a collective expression together.
So when David first said the word power, the first thing that came to me was like brightness and sun and the idea that my power source is my heart, and like that's where the power is. And kind of like being of service, it's the really the power of love. So that's where my mind goes, and it doesn't go to roles that we have or different things in society. Like that's the brightest thing, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind and the most powerful.
Along with what you said, I have found in my experience that true power comes from the opening of the heart. And a few years ago, I found, you can find it on the internet, just power versus force image. And if you look at our world, a lot of it is about force, not about true power. I have found when I stand in my power, a couple years ago, this idea of position, of the things that are longed for by the ego have fallen away, because truly in that place of love, in the chart itself, the very bottom of it is shame. And as it goes up, you can see where force is. I mean, it goes all the way up to grief, fear, desire. Then you get into anger. That's a little up there. And then courage. But love is at about 500 vibrationally in the chart. That's where power is. That's where power really begins, is in that place, in the heart. That is the most important thing. And that is truly where we can work magic in our world. That's what's needed. So to me, that's the ultimate power. It has nothing to do with position or anything like that.
I was just thinking about what K.I. was talking about, and about being a good parent and really seeing your power from the perspective of parenthood, of having power over yourself and others, and bringing the intention to it that you want to nurture them and to facilitate their growth and see the best for them and fight for the best in them. And I really love my mom because she has the power now to, like, she's in her power now as a true, like, nurturer and a parent, to admit that when I was a little kid, she was extremely messed up and not a good parent to me. And because she was in that, she was in a shame and stress, and she was these beautiful people can abuse each other, and we abuse ourselves all the time. And that's because we are coming at ourselves from a place of force and fixing and control-based, like, it must be this way. And I feel like in order to really tap into, the creativity, you have to bring that love. And I also think it has a lot to do with transparency. Because being a good parent is being clear about, like, your shortcomings as a person and as a parent to yourself and to others. And being a parent is so much more than being an enabler and just validating our ego stuff. And I guess when I think about this, I think about my relationships personally, my relationship with my community, my relationship with the government, my relationship with my spirit, and in those terms, I see, like, we can all look at it in terms of, like, is this being a good parent to me? Am I being a good parent to me? What does that feel like? What does that mean? And I feel like what that really means is seeing ourselves completely, clearly, and lucidly, and bringing love to it, and tenderness, and, like, you know, nurturing ourselves to grow in clearer directions and better directions. And I don't know. I was just thinking a lot about parenthood, and really, like, nurturing our inner child and the children within each other. And that's what I think, like, true, clear, beautiful power is that true parenthood brings the most creative evolution out of all of us.
Thank you, Lucy. Power is freely available. We don't need to be concerned if we are powerful or not. You know, when we have to act and do something which is really connected, which is in service, which comes from the heart, then power is there on different levels: spiritual power, mental, emotional, and also physical power through the body, vitality. It's just there. The song from Kristen Hoffman, which we just did here, and we will not fail you. When I felt what happened in our circle, whoa, that was powerful. The words are powerful, the song is powerful, the way she sings is powerful, and then it spreads. It's not just my power, it's a gift in a bigger field, that gives life and beauty and possibility. power comes from the source of endless possibility.
Thank you, Rude. What's coming to me is like there's personal power, and my personal power comes from within. Nobody gives it to me. And I can do good with my power. I can do selfless service with that power. And there's also organization and there's structure. And no matter how much I'm into selfless service, if I find myself, and I have, in organizations where the structure is not a round table, but is like this, and they put me at the top and tell me I have to make everybody behave and do what they're supposed to, I'm not into selfless service anymore. I'm like, oh my God, I have a job to do. You do this and you do that. And so I think they're, you know, there are two separate issues. There's my personal power, and then what organization do I find myself in? And organizations can, by their very structure, either empower others or not. You know, and I've been involved in plenty that disempowered.
I will say I learned a lot about power from Barbara Marx Hubbard. When she was 15 years old, she saw the bomb destroy the cities in Japan. And then she went, and because her family was basically all the generals in World War II were uncles to her, not biological uncles, but very close. So she had access to the president's office, the Oval Office, and asked President Eisenhower, how can we use this new power for good? And she said he had no answer. And so that was my first thing, was like, we're doing this to all these people on this planet, and we have no idea. It was developed not for empowering people, but to destroy. And so I thought that was a great question. And of course, value of your life, I think, sometimes is equal to the questions that you ask. In 1984, Barbara also ran for Vice President of the United States when Geraldine Ferraro was running. She went into the Democratic National Convention with absolutely zero delegates. But what she had done, she had offices for the future all around the country, and she asked all those people to pray for her. And so within 2 days of that convention, she ended up with 200 delegates and was able to address the Democratic National Convention. And if you've never heard that speech, it's on YouTube, Barbara Marx Hubbard, 1984. It'll absolutely blow you away. And then her final question that she would ask, she asked was, what is your heart's deepest desire? And I think that's when we're the most powerful, is when we are listening to that and following that inner guidance. We can do many things, but what is the heart's deepest desire? And I think that's where we stand, or I'll say that I feel I stand my most powerful. Thank you.
Thanks, Noelle. I just want to express my appreciation for this format, that when the community's all sharing and all bringing forth, we're bringing forth our creative power. And so I really love being here with all of you and hearing all of your voices and hearing your power.
Thank you, sir. So the energy of words. As recently as this morning on Democracy Now!, an indigenous woman in the Amazon was being interviewed about where they're standing concerning the political power there and the burning of the Amazon. And she said, and we need to speak truth to power. And I've heard that phrase more and more recently. I'm sure we've heard it in the street someplace with other protesters someplace in the country. And they start chanting, we're speaking truth to power. And I've become aware of the fact that that's disempowering for me. And so when I first heard Michael Bernard Beckwith say, you aren't speaking truth to power, you're speaking truth to pseudo power. You're speaking truth to, they have defined for you that they are the power and you're the one that needs to do something. And today you decided to speak truth to them. But the power is here. and the power is individually in all that I've heard already from those that have spoken. The power is in our individual service, the power is in our individual love, the power is in our individual light. And collectively, when we're standing next to those that are acknowledging that that's really pseudo-power, not really power, there's really power in that collective. Thank you.
Going to a far less grand place and much more everyday, I'm just reminded of helping Jewel, and I think Gary was there, and maybe one other person, but we had to put mattresses up. We wanted to restack the mattresses. We thought that was a good idea. And so two or three of us are wrestling these mattresses and trying to get them way up there. And I think Gary, I forget how, what the configuration was, but it was, you know, when I'm in a situation like that, I think you just come together because you have to. In those moments, you can't drop it and then let somebody else, you know, it's a teamwork thing. And if you drop it, then I'm hurting Jewel or I'm hurting the other people. And so you just have to muster everything you have. And I, in situations like that, I often say something like, I have the strength of 10 men, you know, and it's just that determination and in the moment guttural thing that you just do. And that's power for me.
To echo on some of the other things that that came up, one of the experiments that I did in elementary school, we had a science teacher that had one of the science tables with the marble top on it in the middle of the room, and then invited anybody, any one person, to come up and lift that table. So, you know, kids super strong in their mind go up there and try to lift this table, but nobody could. And then he invited everybody to come and put one pinky on the table. And with one pinky, everybody in the classroom lifted that table like it was nothing. So to echo the collective strength of everybody working together, it speaks to, you know, like Martin Luther King, his ability to join everybody. The pseudo power of the government, that's an illusion. The people that are supporting the politics, the people that are supporting the industry with, you know, buying products or things like that, if everybody were to put down soda, that industry would fall. It's the power is in the collective and in the individuals. And we all have our inner guidance. We all have our direction, and we have a navigation system that we can collectively follow our own guidance system. And together, I heard somewhere the next evolution of humans is humanity coming together in that collectiveness.
Just briefly, I've always had some kind of desire inside of myself to find control and to trust there's a beautiful design working out. And that's really kind of spacey when you consider the way most of us have been trained to think. But I can imagine, and I believe in this, that, and I feel it works right here, that if I'm in a state where I wish to be in a state of control, not controlling others, but in a state of control, finding out what that means, and a trusting that there is a larger design, then something miraculous can happen that is of the nature of creativity or increased creativity. And I may not have it all figured out or trying to manipulate in a controlled way, but a new kind of experience of power coming through control, and it's not because I'm trying to manipulate, it's because I wish to bring peace on earth or something creative on earth. So there's a different kind of sense of control than we usually experience in the world of outer power structures.
It's the power of love. I agree with Cece in that book. It's a wonderful book. But when we talk about us being a vibrational teaching here, that is the highest vibration. And, you know, David, when you first said the powers, you know, immediately it's the powers over us with the government and the pharmacies and the spraying and all that happens to us and the rules and the laws. But when you get right down to it, that is a pseudo power. I really like that because the vibrational level of power, and we do have control over that, whether we put that out there or not, is amazing. I mean, I've used it so many times in my life. That is where our power lies, if we can really send out that vibration of love, and it magically changes things. And collectively, if we can do that, just imagine how powerful that would be, because that's where we have control over our power, and that is the powerful power that we have, the power of love.
I think we have an opportunity now to experience power. Let's magnify the power with our voice. I'll start on a tone and you can join me, and we can hold that and then diversify or move if we like. Take advantage of what's moving around this circle and bless this song, bless this possibility to change the world, to change the world for the children involved and to change the planet, to know there is no lack of power. Bless David and Kristen in their creation. Selfless service, the wholesome blessing that we might bring to change the world. Amen. Thank you for participating in this beautiful hour. Thank you.